Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Deadly Football League Show. Bournemouth tame the Terriers. Nathan Jones finds utopia in Hull. Reading inch themselves further from trouble. Scruffy QPR fall to posh yet again. There's a big shock in League One. And Cooper's no longer at the wheel for Barrow. This is the Totally Football League Show in association with Paddy Power. We are again then, gang. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, here to talk you through everything that happened in the EFL this weekend in the company of the former Arsenal and more winger Adrian Clarke.
Hello, Matt.
Swindon Town Hall of Famer Sam Parkin's with us.
Afternoon, Matt.
And the host of the Athletics Football Podcast and more, Flo Lloyd Hughes, is back too. Hi, Flo.
Hello, Matt. I was worried you were going to go something about landlords because that's what my intro seems to be on like any single bit of content I do at the moment. So I was a bit worried, like, not another reference to landlords. So I'm glad it's not about the housing market anyway.
No, I thought I'd pick one of the podcasts that you host, and I whittled it down from the initial 307 that I had, and that's the one that we went for this week. Now, Abby's just put in the script that she and I share, FA Cup kudos to Borough and Forest. Adrian, are they worthy of kudos? They both lost. Middlesbrough were beaten within half an hour. Were we a bit disappointed by the respective efforts? Forest played all right, but Liverpool always had another gear to go to.
I commend both teams, actually. I think that they didn't park the bus. They went for it. They tried to be aggressive. They tried to get in the faces of the opposition. Just weren't quite good enough. Middlesbrough were definitely a little bit outclassed by Chelsea, who played well. Liverpool reserves just about had enough, didn't they, for Forest? But I think, yeah, they come away with credit, created some good chances. The goal was really tight, cool. The miss from Zinchenko was a big one, wasn't it? So now I think Forest especially can come out of this cup run feeling really good about themselves. So yeah, it just wasn't meant to be.
Well done to both sets of supporters. Definitely magnificent atmospheres at both games. And a shout out to the Forest supporters group Forza Garibaldi, who organised that magnificent display when the teams came out. That's enough FA Cup. Let's head to the Championship. In the Championship, Bournemouth strengthened their grip on second place with a 3-0 win at faltering Huddersfield. Luton are up to third after a comfortable victory at Hull. Reading earned a huge win in their fight for survival, beating Blackburn by a goal to nil to move 5 points clear of danger. Millwall and West Brom's playoff hopes were dealt a blow by Stoke and Bristol City respectively. Sheffield United's win against Barnsley lifted them into the playoff places and leaves the Tykes adrift in the drop zone. And Derby still just about in with a sniff of survival thanks to a 1-1 draw against Coventry. Let's start with that sensational win for Bournemouth up in Yorkshire. The Cherries picking off the Terriers of Huddersfield and earning a 3-0 win. Sam, Dom Solanke looked like the star man to me in this game. Someone you and I know very well and somebody who's been just excellent all season.
Yeah, very good. Wonderfully taken goal. Large hand in the first two. I think he gets himself two assists for that, doesn't it? Considering it was his shot that was parried for Lerma's. So, yeah, he was very isolated in that draw against Reading we spoke of last week. And I think it's just as simple as Scott Parker's instructions were different on this day, probably in the wake of that disappointing draw and the home draw against Peterborough, sent them out. A lot more intensity. They pressurised Huddersfield's two centre-halves who aren't brilliant on the ball. Colwell was probably their best one, who was sat on the bench for the opening 45 minutes and brought on at half-time. So I almost feel like I owe Scott Parker a bit of an apology after me and Adrian went for him a little bit on Friday when we were discussing their woes on a different media platform. But this is what the fans want to see. You know, they're on the front foot. There was a, you know, inevitability about that Reading equaliser in the last game. And I've got a big long list of pluses for Bournemouth at the weekend. I won't bore you with them, but obviously the setup, Kelly defensively back to his best, Amira and Anthony down the left-hand side. But it's just being clinical. That's the biggest thing. You know, you get your goals and then they can control the game with their possession-based football. That's the difference to what's been happening in the recent home games.
5 points clear of third place with two games in hand, Flo. It looks as if second place is theirs to lose, but they've still got some pretty tough games coming up. West Brom, Sheffield United away, Middlesbrough at home, Coventry, Fulham, Blackburn, Forest. So it's not a given.
No, I think on Quest on Saturday night, Colin was really trying to force Jamie Mackey and George Ellis' hand on tipping Bournemouth for promotion. But I think they have a really good chance. I mean, I don't want to be salty, but they do have the cheat codes of having one of the biggest, most expensive squads in the division. So you would put them here in this position with the amount of games to go, you know, at the start of the season, and then what they added in January on top of that. So it's not really surprising that they're at this point. And I would, yeah, probably say they're definitely the best place to go up in that second automatic spot. But I mean, they have had some sticky patches this season. So it's whether their confidence is still back where it was. But I do agree with Sam. I think they just look like a much more ruthless side and more the Bournemouth that we saw at the start of the season on Saturday. And I think Huddersfield were kind of undone by what they've struggled with the entire season, which is they just don't create a lot of chances. They've got, I think I was having a look before we came on, they're 17th in the league for XG and 13th in the table for shots per game. So if they're wanting to be in and around the playoffs, you know, they've got to be creating more than that. And I think they've been overperforming to get to this stage. Good on the ball. You know, very solid, organised side. But when you look at the teams above them, they're far more ruthless in attack. They've got a lot better players going forward as well. So these things seem almost to balance themselves out come this point in the season.
The third goal was just sensational. That was a Premier League quality goal.
Now up against Turton, towards the left corner of the penalty area. Zamora is overlapping. Billing pulls it back. Solanke with the flick, and it's 3-0! What a start in the second half! Bournemouth have surely wrapped it up. It's John Solanke's 24th of the season.
Starts with the keeper, beat the press, really slick move, and it ends with a back heel finish. So definitely tipping our hat to the players for that goal. I don't know, I think me and Sam definitely were onto something with Parker and why he deserved criticism. His team looked like they played with more fun in the game. They relaxed, they just went for it. Pressed, and they didn't overcomplicate it. I actually think that Carlos Corbrand's maybe guilty of overcomplicating Huddersfield. We've praised how he changes game on game, and it's worked clearly, but don't know. Over the last couple of games, look at Sorba Thomas. We talked about Sorba Thomas playing up front at West Brom, looking really good. Then he went to right wing back against Millwall, and then in this game he played on the right wing in a 4-4-2, and I looked as well at the midfield. I thought Lerma, Cook and Billing really overran there too, of Russell and O'Brien. And Russell's new to the team. O'Brien's been playing wide. I just think maybe they needed to go through midfield for that game. So yeah, I think Corbrand had a bit of an off day, but Bournemouth were superb.
Yeah, 15 days ago, Huddersfield had been a point above Bournemouth in second place. Bournemouth now 6 points clear of third, Luton, with two games in hand. Huddersfield on the slide, but maybe the break for them coming at a good time so they can reset. Now then, Nathan Jones, not a man who sits on the fence when it comes to expressing himself. The Luton gaffer, giddy with glee after seeing his side move up to third, courtesy of a 3-1 win. Holy said, I'm so proud of them. It's magnificent to see where we are in the league. That's utopia. What's he going to do if they make the playoffs, Clarkey?
he's going to have some kind of orgasm, isn't he? It's exciting. It's exciting times for him, for Luton.
I wouldn't want to see that.
No, we wouldn't want to see that, no. No, but he's, I really like him. I've gotten great with him as a teammate. He is passionate. He's so into it. It's unbelievable. He was the same when he was in his early 20s. It's not a surprise to me at all. But third is amazing for Luton, you know, given how small a club they are, given the lack of sort of firepower in terms of wages. And this was really nicely done, wasn't it? They pressed Hull City, forced mistakes out of them. They scored a worldy free kick. I mean, that was perfection. If you're talking about free kicks, it does not get any better than James Brees whip over the wall off the crossbar, just kissing the underside there. That's one of the best I've seen all season across any of the divisions. And they're doing it at the moment with loads of centre-backs missing. I think 3, 4, 5 are out of the team at the moment. So, yeah, massive kudos to them. I was looking at turnovers because that's what stood out here. Adebayo and Cornick up front, pressing the life out of Hull. That's 9 goals that have been scored from high turnovers for Luton this season. That's a joint high with Fulham, which is brilliant, you know, because it shows that they're being assertive. They're not a counter-attacking side. They're assertive. They're trying to make things happen. Excellent. Absolutely excellent. The next 4 games are huge for Luton Town, aren't they? They've got Millwall at home, Posh away, Huddersfield away, and Forest away. Now, if they can get a couple of wins out of those 4 tricky games, then they're right in with the mix, aren't they? It's been an amazing season for them.
I also wanted to give a shout out actually to Luton Town first team coach Alan Sheehan, because I know he's had a massive effect on set pieces there. And I had a look and they're just behind Fulham now in terms of number of set piece goals with 15, Fulham with 16. So for Luton to really be upping the quality of their set pieces, he deserves a lot of credit. And I don't even think Bree is the regular free kick taker, but because of so many injuries, he kind of stepped up and took the opportunity. And you can see why he might be getting more of those as well.
Brilliant for them, but a 5th straight home defeat for Hull. They've only managed 1 goal in that time too. Third time was not a charm for QPR, who lost to Peterborough for the 3rd time this season. Posh off the bottom, 7 points from safety. QPR 8th. Oh, Flo, they're looking a bit jaded now, aren't they, your lot?
Yeah, yesterday was pretty bleak, to be honest. It was a rare trip not working at the game for me, and I was really looking forward to it, very excited. Got off to a really good start. Luke Amos scored a brilliant goal. But the team is really lacking a lot of confidence at the moment, even though they're taking the lead in some games, took the lead at Forest midweek as well. But when things start to unravel, it kind of descends and collapses very quickly. And the mood in the camp's getting a little bit kind of negative, a little bit panicky. There are some injury issues, but there was some substitutions that were made when QPR went 3-1 down. Mark Warburton made a triple substitution. He took off Luke Amos, the goal scorer, who was by far the best player on the pitch, the most energetic player, was making things happen. He took off him, took off Andre Gray, who's actually in good form, even though he's, you know, not the fastest, sharpest anymore. He is in good form. And Andre Dizel. And it was met with huge, huge boos. The home fans were not happy. And there was even this awkward moment where it looked like Jimmy Dunn was going to come off, and then the PA announcer had to say, oh, no, correction, it's actually Andre Dizel. It was just always just awkward and kind of chaotic. But there is nothing more embarrassing than losing to really poor sides. I think QPR fans and probably the players, and Warburton admitted this himself, they're more than happy if, you know, Fulham or Bournemouth come to town and play them off the park. But I think to let a team like Peterborough do what they did in that second half, they were by far the better team in the second half. Jack Marriott scores an absolute screamer, which he gets once every maybe like 2 years, but it was, you know, had all the time in the world to pick out his shot. I think it's just really frustrating. And I don't know if the international break's coming at a good time or a bad time, because they definitely needed to reset, but you now sort of feel like, well, what is there worth fighting for now? And I feel like they could be slipping, lower and lower down the table and could end up in, you know, 10th, 11th, 12th come the end of the season.
I might as well have my moan. I don't disagree with anything Flo said. What I do disagree with is Jeff Hendrick and Deion Sanderson getting a little bit of grief. It's not their fault that they were signed in the window to come in and add a little bit of depth. I think the problem being is they weren't the right areas of the pitch that QPR needed to strengthen. That is clear as day to me. I've said all season they needed more pace in the squad. And I think because they've struggled with creativity, struggled to get enough goals out of Austin, Gray and Dykes. They needed another striker. They needed another wide creator to add some pace. I think that's where the mistakes have been made. And if it is to falter at this late stage after what's been a pretty good season, then I think that's the reasons rather than, you know, two players coming that aren't having a great effect. And yeah, it sounded like the atmosphere wasn't brilliant yesterday, understandably, given that QPR did a QPR and lost for the third time against a really poor side.
Yeah, it does feel, doesn't it, as if they're going to slide out of it, especially with the, you know, teams like Forest and Borough looking to get in. Just a quick word on Peterborough. I just think there's a feeling of what might have been there in terms of the style of football, you know, and more attacking, I think, under Grant McCann, but also the front two. Marriott has been missing for a lot of the season. Clark Harris has struggled in the previous formation. They've been paired together for periods of the last three games. And I've got my calculator out. They've shared the pitch for 156 minutes across the last three games. And Peterborough have scored five goals during that time when they've been on the pitch at the same time. That's one every 31 minutes. I'm not saying that would be sustainable, but they are clicking. And they'll start to believe maybe that they can produce a miracle. I don't think they will, but if they're scoring goals, which the team are now, you're in with a sniff, aren't you?
Right, plenty more Championship chat to come after this brief interlude.
So what do you think about this Jesse Marsh then?
I quite like him. He's American and American managers never get relegated, do they?
That's because there's no relegation in Major League Soccer.
Oh.
It would be generous to say Leeds definitely won't get relegated, but if you want generous, try Paddy Power's Bet Builder offer and get money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold Bet Builder lets you down. Paddy Power.
Pre-match online Bet Builder bets only. Win odds 1 to 5 per leg. Max free bet £10 per day. 7-day free bet expiry. Excludes enhanced match odds. Eligibility restrictions and T's and C's apply. 18+ BeGambleAware.org.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Sheffield United are up to fifth after they gave their promotion hopes a boost while hurting Barnsley's chances of staying up 2-0, the score at Bramall Lane. The goal scorers, Sam, both pivotal players at the moment for United. Sander Berge over the last, month or so, but Morgan Gibbs-White's been phenomenal all season.
He has, and Barnsley manager spoke about how difficult it is to shackle him afterwards and summed it up pretty well, because when you're playing essentially a attacking midfielder off the centre forward, it makes it incredibly difficult for the centre halves to know where to get tight, whether to follow him into deep areas. And what I loved about his goal was him gambling and running and beyond, timing a run, wonderfully found by McBurney, but something that you probably wouldn't associate with Gibbs-White. So with a hamstring injury, I think it is for Billy Sharp, his importance becomes even greater for the running. But I think, like a lot of the teams, you know, looking at the stats this morning, looking at the run-ins, you know, this is probably going to be a year where we're going to see the teams that are ridiculously organised, that are resilient defensively, prosper. Because there's not loads of sides with great deal of flair outside of Fulham and Bournemouth, I would say. I'd put Forest, actually, maybe in that category, Matt, just for you. But you think of the other teams up there, Jocelyn, Middlesbrough, Sheffield United, Blackburn. There's not an abundance of creativity and goals right now in those sides, I would say. So Sheffield United are so good, especially at home. They've got five of their remaining eight games at Bramall Lane. Sometimes you write down something in your notes, and I keep looking at it because I think it can't be right. They've conceded one in their last 10 at home, which is just astonishing going, and says to me that they're not going to have to score a plethora of goals to get where they want to be. So good second half performance. Well, certainly a good performance once they went in front, Barnsley really unfortunate. I think Wolf, the midfield player, had two of the better chances in this game at 0-0, and Wes Fodringham made an unbelievable save. So it probably flattered Sheffield United 2-0, but Barnsley's problems away from home persist. They're the worst in the division now that Peterborough have picked up a win at QPR. So if they can turn around that, then they're going to have a chance of salvaging their season. But yeah, Sheffield United ticking along really nicely.
Yeah, I'm beaten at home under Paul Heckingbottom. We probably owe him an apology. As Sheffield United pointed out on Twitter, last 63 days, they've played 16 games and 29 points and gone from 14th to 5th. Barnsley, meanwhile, 5 points from safety. They face Reading in 2 weeks. And speaking of which, Flo was on hand at the not-at-all clunkily named Select Car Leasing Stadium, a place named after temporary ownership of a car, fittingly has a team with a temporary manager. Flo, save me. Tell us about this game. The goal was good. The rest of it, not so much.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of teams, and I was kind of going to add to what Sam was saying about Sheffield United. There's so many teams in and around the playoffs who are having massive injury issues. And I think this game on Saturday was just a prime example of that. And with Billy Sharp looking like he's going to be out for a while, Sheffield United have already lost McGoldrick, Brewster and Bogle. And Blackburn on Saturday, still without Brent Brereton. He's been out since, I think, the 14th of February. He's been called up to Chile for the international break. I think Tony Mowbray's praying he doesn't get a look in. And I think it's unlikely he's going to play, but he's there anyway. And it's just Blackburn offer so little without him. Kadra went off injured as well in this game, and Mowbray afterwards wasn't very hopeful on that. So it seems like a lot of those squads who had really good runs at the start of the year are now crumbling a little bit and losing some really key players. And I'm just not sure how they're going to sustain. And I would put Blackburn maybe under the kind of QPR umbrella of drifting out of the playoff positions. I mean, it was a quality goal that won the game for Reading. Josh Lawrence, unbelievable strike out of nowhere, really, because it had 0-0 written all over it. I just didn't see how either team were going to get a winner. Lucas Schau missed some really good chances in the first half. But yeah, Blackburn just so toothless without Brereton. Just don't see them scoring a goal. Gallagher missed a good couple of chances. Bradley Dack came off and missed a one-on-one. Confidence is super low. And I think the fans are getting a little bit upset as well, just about how they're not really being ruthless at all with a lot of decent chances they're creating. But I feel like they're going to slip out as well.
Yeah, it's a long time for the away fans to suffer, isn't it? It's 99 days. I think it's probably 100 days now since they saw their team in the flesh score an away goal, because the last time they scored away from home was behind closed doors in Wales. So, yeah, it's been a crazy run. I think a little bit like QPR with Sam, what he said about addressing the right areas of the team. He wanted more pace in at QPR. I think Blackburn needed to get more of a like-for-like backup for Ben Brereton-Diaz. They didn't really do that. And they're ending up with strikers that aren't strikers. You know, Kadra's been used up there. Buckley's been used up there as a sort of false nine. Gallagher can do it, but I think he's more effective almost as a wide forward. So, yeah, I think that they will look back at January, Blackburn Rovers, and think, did we miss a trick there? In light of, obviously, it's what's happened to their main man.
I think we've missed a trick here. We should have drawn up a old school manager bingo for Paul Ince. I think a few weeks ago he did too much tippy-tappy or something.
Yeah, along those lines. Yeah, yeah.
And then after Josh Lawrence goal, I knew it was coming. I haven't even seen him do that in training. Straight off the bat, just knocking Josh Lawrence down after probably the goal of the weekend. It was sumptuous, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was full of charm in the post match as well, saying he was really praying that Reading would win because it was his wife's birthday and they were going out for a Chinese, I think, and he knew that if they'd lost, he was going to be really grumpy. He didn't want to ruin his wife's birthday. So it was more relief than anything, I think. And, you know, looking at the teams around them, I actually give Reading a good shot now of widening that gap. Still not sure why Ince is there in the first place, But I do think, you know, there is enough attacking quality there, as kind of chaotic and calamitous as the defence might be. There is definitely enough quality going forward to, I think, rescue them. But it's a weird old time, I think, to be a Reading fan.
Looks $1 million though, Paul Ince. I don't think he looks any different to when he was a player. Tony Mowbray, meanwhile, with every passing day, looks more and more like an owl. All about the late drama at Ashton Gate, finished all square between Bristol City and West Bromwich Albion. Clarky, I've got this down as a point that doesn't really suit either. Another underwhelming home performance from Bristol City, and West Brom need wins if they're going to get back in the top six.
Yeah, I just don't think West Brom have quite got it this season. They do look better in a back three, and they showed a bit of character because, from what I gather, they were really bad for the first hour of this game, but they managed to find a way, didn't they? But yeah, from Bristol City's point of view, it just summed up their season, didn't it, in terms of giving away leads. It's crazy how often it's happened. 11 times they've conceded after the 90th minute this season. I mean, that's just ridiculous. I think 20% of all the goals they've conceded have come after the 81st minute this season. So I don't know what that comes down to. I think it has to be mentality. I know they've got a younger team this year, haven't they, under Pearson? So maybe they're sort of switching off and making some rookie mistakes, maybe not managing games better. I did notice that a few of the fans were coming for Nigel Pearson after the game, saying, where were the tactical substitutions? And I do get it. I do get it, because most managers have those up their sleeve, don't they? If you're ahead coming into the last few minutes, you slow the game down. And I think he had a couple of subs up his sleeve and he didn't put them on. And so, yeah, that's frustrating. But we should praise Andy Vyman. It would be wrong not to give him a bit of credit. It was a great goal, a brilliant volley. Old school football, wasn't it? The long diagonal free kick. Big header from Atkinson, and there he was to spank it home on the volley. Brilliant from him. And we haven't talked about him enough on this show. 18 goals, 9 assists. That's remarkable in a very mediocre Bristol City side. And he's played in different positions as well. He's not playing right up front. He didn't play there in this game either. So, yeah, Andy Vyman, well played. But they've got to learn to see games out.
Yeah, I mean, I think so much praise needs to be had to Vyman as well, because without him, they would certainly be in the relegation zone at the moment, because I think he's just inflated their position completely with his goals. And I can't believe Nigel Pearson's still there. I think they are one of the worst teams in the division by far. I'm surprised to even see them in 18th right now. And I think next season, unless something changes, they're in serious trouble, because they're not good at all. And I think this sort of game was a prime example of, you know, a bit of quality from him giving them a shot, but then the reality of the score that they've got getting them into trouble again. And I just think that there needs to be serious bit of overhaul in the summer. Otherwise, next season, they're going to be in real trouble, especially with the likes, you know, if it goes like it is now with Barnsley, Peterborough and Derby all going down, next season is going to be so tight, because, you know, it's a lot of teams who are on the edge at the moment.
All right, let's bring in producer Abby to give us some odds on the Championship, courtesy of Paddy Power. Abby, what have you got for us?
Well, Matt, I'm going to talk to you about your beloved Nottingham Forest, because they are the third favourites to be in the top six come the end of the season. They are 4-9. Sheffield United, the favourites on this list, they are 4-1 on, and Luton 11-4 on as well. And Middlesbrough then the fourth most likely to be in the top six, 2-1 on there. If you fancy backing Forest to win the whole playoffs, that's 7-2. But if that's not numbers you like the sound of, how about this? Relegation, Derby, 100-1 on.
Excellent. Right, we'll check in on League One next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. If you want to read more Football League content from the likes of Nancy Frostick, Paul Taylor, Phil Buckingham, Peter Rutzler, and more of The Athletic's best writers, you can do so by heading to theathletic.com/leagueshow and get yourself a subscription of just £1 a month for the next 6 months. That's theathletic.com/leagueshow.
In League One, the leaders Rotherham suffered a shock 3-0 defeat at home to Shrewsbury. Wigan moved to within a point of top spot after breezing past Morecambe at the DW. MK Dons kept pace after a narrow win at Cambridge. Luke McNally scored a 95th-minute equaliser for Oxford at home to Ipswich. And Wimbledon drop into the relegation zone after suffering late heartbreak at Cheltenham. Crikey Moses, Sam, who saw this coming? Rotherham 0, Shrewsbury 3 at the New York Stadium. The previously imperious Millers continued to stutter, just one win in five for them. And we have said that they haven't been at their brilliant best in recent weeks, but 3-0 at home to Shrewsbury. I know they had a man sent off, but this was the shocker of the weekend, wasn't it?
Well, it's the best thing I've said in the last fortnight was after Shrewsbury's 5-0 win against Morecambe. That was off the back of having 49 shots in the previous three games and only scoring one goal. So I absolutely saw this coming. No, I didn't. It's a bit of a wobble, isn't it, from Rotherham. They lost, I think, 3-5 at the end of August, September. But obviously at this stage of the season, I think they're 10th in the form guide last 10 games. So they're not at their brilliant best, but I think there's a helping hand from a really poor refereeing decision, to be honest. I know Shrewsbury were the better side and the stats back that up, more corners, twice the shots on target at 1-0. They'd started the game brilliantly, but we know that Rotherham are a strong team. It's not a red. It's maybe a yellow because it's a bit clumsy at worst. So that's had a big effect on the game. But from that point on in the second half, Steve Cottrell summed it up pretty well after the game. I think they just took the sting out of it brilliantly. They wanted to dominate the ball. The centre-halves actually just controlled it from a Shrewsbury perspective because you know when you're playing against 10, if there's turnovers, they get opportunities on the counter-attack. So they just limited that really well and obviously added to their tally with another couple. They've got two good front men at the moment. Bowman's in great form and Udo is always good for a goal. So no, fantastic result for them. And I think had they not taken maximum points from these two games, I'm sure the Shrewsbury supporters would have been looking over their shoulders. So that's them, you know, done and dusted for another year.
He did have to change four, or he chose to change four of his back five, Paul Warne, in this game. And I think that is important. After the midweek game, obviously they sort of limped past Lincoln. Not entirely sure on the reasons why. I think there was a little bit of rotation in there. But when you change that many members of a unit, I think it's a risky move. I really do. It's a shame because he's kind of overloaded with good wing backs, good centre halves. Doesn't have that same luxury up front. And I think if you're going to rotate, and we see it with other clubs, if you're going to rotate, I would much prefer to rotate the strikers, keep them fresh and firing from a midweek to a weekend. But he did it the other way round. And obviously Shrewsbury gave them all sorts of problems. A fantastic performance from them.
Hey, Matt, have you seen Tyrese Fauna? Because he's getting rave reviews and he's one of your mob.
Yeah, he's very highly rated, I think, but difficult to break into the two-time European champions team at the moment. So we'll let him go and get some seasoning out on loan. Flo?
I was just going to add to what Adrian said. There was a lot of chat on Twitter from unhappy Rotherham fans about the fact that Ogbenna and Miller didn't start the game. And Paul Warne said afterwards that he'd had some medical advice from the physios that they needed a rest, and they definitely missed them. I think they didn't really offer as much going forward either. And I do think, though, if you're MK Dons and you know that chasing pack behind Wigan, you'd kind of look at Rotherham and say, you know, if Wigan overtake them, they're now only 1 point behind. You've got a good chance of really dragging them into the playoffs. So it's definitely the wrong time to be stumbling into this bad form.
Shrewsbury not lost at Rotherham since 2007. Four wins and four draws. The one game they did lose, playoff final a few years ago, if everyone remembers.
Oh, stinger. So, yeah, I don't know whether that makes them a bogey team or not, but we'll talk more about those later. Before we leave this game, Sam, I've got a tweet of the week for you. Comes from the aforementioned Ryan Bowman. Now, there's a picture here, and poor Ryan has had his shorts pulled down. by what we believe to be Luke Leahy. Luckily for us and for him, he's got some long blue boxers on, which really look like a pair of shorts and mean that he can smile in the picture, even though he's been embarrassed. Keep that in mind as I read the text. Good day, football emoji, sunshine emoji, shorts pulled down in celebration, laughing face with mouth open emoji, laughing face with mouth open emoji at Luke Leahy. I mean, it's all about the picture, really, isn't it? But the emoji use is fine, 7 out of 10.
I think it's better than what we've been served up recently. I'm a bit surprised, you know, a hard Scottish number 9 with that amount of emojis. You know, that does surprise me. I think he'd be straight to the point, you know, a lack of emoji. But yeah, it's at least he's focused on a light moment from the game rather than applauding the supporters, who, of course, are going to be very jubilant with the 3 goals.
Oh, well done, Ryan. You get the parking seal of approval. Now then, Wigan took advantage of that stumble by Rotherham to cut the gap between the two to just a single point, as Flo says. The Latics doing for an increasingly doom-looking Morecambe at the DW. Which pundit was it of us who was saying that Josh McGuinness was a bit of a problem for Wigan, and what
Me,
were they going to do with
yeah.
him? Yes, it was Adrian Clark. And lo and behold, he scored his second goal in 4 days. So probably what spurred him on.
Exactly. No good on him as well. I never said he was a bad player. I was just saying that, okay, I get that he's holding the ball up. I get that he provides that aerial threat. But if him playing comes at the expense of a Callum Lang or a Will Keane or a Stephen Humphries, then and Wigan aren't winning matches, then you're going to look at that. So I stand by my minor criticism, because he wasn't doing a great deal. But yeah, it was a really good header in this match. So yeah, well, I was pleased for him. He did really well. And obviously Callum Lang wasn't involved in this one, so he got his opportunity. It's just, yeah, it was a convincing win, wasn't it? But probably, we probably would have all predicted this. Morecambe are leaking a lot of goals at the moment. Wigan, I mean, this is one of those moments that Sam was talking about earlier. I dug up this stat and I can't quite believe it. Wigan have only conceded 6 goals in the final half hour of matches this season, and that includes injury time. To put that into some kind of perspective, 6 goals in the final half hour. The League One average, and I spent a long time over this, the League One average is 20.6 goals per team conceded in the last 30 minutes of matches. So they are pros when it comes to game management and seeing things out and finishing games strong. And yeah, you know, the idea of football, because you know, it all builds to a crescendo, it builds to a climax, is that you finish games strong. So, and they do it better than most. As for Morecambe, obviously letting in way too many goals. I looked at their starting 11. Stockton, obviously approaching 20 goals. No one else in that starting 11 had got more than 2. So maybe it's not the surprise of the century that they struggled there.
Before we go any further, does everyone know that Josh McGuinness was a goalkeeper at Cardiff when he was an apprentice?
Yeah.
I'm not sure who turned him into a striker, but Clarkie probably still feels he should be a goalkeeper, going on his recent comments.
No, I don't think he's rubbish. But that, what an achievement, by the way, to have the career that he's having.
Mad, isn't it?
When he changed so late. I mean, I've known keepers that are decent outfield, but like not decent enough to play pro.
To give you the best one, Clarkie.
Go on.
Graham Stack.
Oh, yeah.
Central midfield in the county side, Graham Stack. Very, very good outfield player.
Was he really? Wow.
Former Arsenal and Millwall goalie, was he? Millwall as well, Graham Stack.
There's Watford's goalie coach. Yeah, incredible scenes. Didn't know that.
Flo, what do you make of this? This is what Derek Adams said. I've just spoken with the staff. They've said it's been the story of the season, conceding from crossed balls into the box. I kind of hate this Lampardian-like buck passing. All right, you've not been there long, but you're the manager. What happens is largely your responsibility.
Yeah, and if you've had time as well to focus on things, I think you're almost outing yourself at the same time by saying, well, then why haven't you done anything about it? That's a bit embarrassing, isn't it? If you know exactly what the problem is.
Quite a big part of football as well, balls coming in your box, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think he probably should have kept that to himself.
AFC Wimbledon looked on course for a first league win this year until they fell at the final furlong against Cheltenham, conceding thrice in the final 10 minutes to turn a 1-0 lead into a 3-1 defeat. I know they haven't won all year, Flo, but there are points in seasons where you just think, relegation, that's coming for this team. And this kind of result is one of those, unfortunately, I think.
Yeah, it hurts to have to say, but I really think it's looking inevitable now for Wimbledon, because this game, it really just tells the story of their whole entire season. The number of opportunities they've had to not be in the position that they are in now, and every single time they have wasted those opportunities. And we were talking about how many goals Stockton scored compared to the rest of the team. Jack Rodoni put them into the lead on the weekend. He's got 8 goals. He's their highest scorer for the season, and then everyone else has got 6 or less. So there's a real lack of goals, but then you compound that with terrible defensive issues, and then confidence. I mean, you'd think 10 minutes to go, 1-0 up, can see it out and get a first win in 18 league games. So, I mean, talk about desperate times. And then it's just a complete collapse so quickly. So it's yet another knock in confidence. And I just don't see how they can get out of this one, because up until, you know, a week or so ago, they'd been let off by the fact that everyone around them had continued to waste opportunities to leapfrog them. I mean, Morecambe, Gillingham, they'd had a number of opportunities to do it and hadn't done it. And Wimbledon were kind of clinging on desperately. But time was obviously going to run out, because one of those teams was going to turn. Gillingham have now leapfrogged them, dragging them into it. And I just don't see a way out, because even if they get themselves ahead in games, they've just got zero confidence, and they're not good on the ball at all. So any single time a team is going forward, it's kind of heart in mouth for them. So yeah, I really fear for them, because I think it could be League Two, to be honest.
It's looking like it's 4 from 6, right, Adrian, at the bottom? Just looking at the table, you've got Fleetwood and Gillingham both on 34 points, then the relegation zone, Wimbledon 33, Morecambe 32. Doncaster 30 and Crewe a little cut adrift, but a big gap up to 18th place Lincoln. So it's probably going to go to the wire, isn't it? To
determine, I think so, which, yeah. I don't think there are too many surprises there. I think that Cheltenham are one of those sides that some people might have put in there, but they've been brilliant up to 12th. So well played. Then Cambridge as well have overachieved. But the others, I think we all probably tipped to struggle. Crewe looked down.
I can't see Plymouth there.
All right, we've moved on from that. You know, I've got new fans.
I want a new manager to come on and give you a bit.
I don't know. I think Doncaster's draw with Fleetwood kind of didn't help either, did it? I think Gillingham under Neil Harris feel like they might just pinch enough points to escape it. So I think it's probably 4 from 5. In my opinion, Fleetwood can't keep clean sheets, can they? Apart from the one they got at the weekend against Donny. So yeah, 4 from 5 in my view.
Abby, what are the odds saying in terms of the outrights in League One, please?
Well, there's a bit of a change, because Wigan are the odds-on favourites to win the whole of League One. They are 4-7, Rotherham 6-4, MK Dons 14-1. I just wanted to do a quick straw poll, because I'm looking at the to win the playoffs odds section. Straw poll, who's going to win the playoffs? Adrian? First team that comes to your mind.
Who is going to win the playoffs in
League One? You've got to say Plymouth now.
Do you know what? They've got a great chance. They've got a wonderful chance. I am going to say that Milton Keynes Dons. Yeah. I think MK Dons or Plymouth. I wouldn't back Oxford, because they're poor at the back. Sunderland are flaky. And we don't know who's going to get in there out of Ipswich, Sheffield Wednesday, Wickham. I don't think I could back any of those. So, yeah, Milton Keynes or Plymouth to go up, in my opinion.
Flay?
I'm going to go Plymouth. I think that's fun. Plymouth's a fun answer.
Mm. And Sam, who's going to win the playoffs?
Pre-weekend, I thought Sunderland and Wickham would get in. I'm going to go for Sunderland.
Ooh.
Okay, so Paddy Power's favourites to win the playoffs are Sheffield Wednesday at 11-4, MK 7-2, Sunderland 4-1, and Oxford United 9-2. In fact, Sunderland aren't really in their lookings for the top 6 finish, because Wigan, Rotherham, and MK Dons are not in the odds. So Plymouth 3-1 on to be in the top 6, Sheffield Wednesday 11-4 on to be in the top 6, and Oxford United 9-4 on. So sorry, Black Cats fans, League One again for you next season.
You heard it here first. Right, last stop, League Two.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis Adams.
In League Two, Exeter moved up to second with a 2-0 win at Oldham. They're 5 points off top spot. Bristol Rovers maintained their red-hot form with a 1-0 win at fellow promotion chasers Northampton. Salford hit five against rock bottom Scunthorpe. Carlisle earned the bragging rights in the Cumbrian derby by beating Barrow 2-1. And Steve Evans' first game as Stevenage manager will have to wait. Their game against Mansfield postponed due to COVID. Some unsurprising news breaking from Barrow, who have sacked manager Mark Cooper. He of the 8-game ban for telling a female ref that this is a man's game. Not too many mourning his departure, I don't think, Sammy, either Barrow-wise or otherwise. Not really a surprise, this decision.
Maybe at this stage of the season, I would say. And given that they gave him a 3-year contract, and considering that they lost to Carlisle, who one of the form sides in the division, but it is a bit of a derby, I suppose. So that heightens the supporters' angst and probably makes the owners a little bit twitchy. But I'm a little bit surprised, yeah, because he, you know, was given a long contract. But it's just, you know, where do they go from here, I suppose, with the few games that remain? I'm not saying that Mark Cooper was going to get them out of it, but it's a bit of a gamble to change for someone that comes in from the exterior with such a pressurized last few weeks of the season. I think scoring goals, you know, we've spoken about that a lot today, has been the issue for Barrow. Haven't scored more than one in the last 13 games. Defensively, not bad at all. I think only seven teams had more clean sheets. So that's clearly not the issue. It's going the other way. And when I look at Stevenage making the change, bringing someone in who's got experience of this type of situation, I think it's going to be difficult. I think Stevenage will probably gain something from getting Steve Evans in. Going to be really interested to see what Barrow do now.
Clarky is a Southend loyalist. Can you explain to me why the early money has Phil Brown as the heavy favourite to get the gig?
No. Other than I know that Phil Brown, when he first took the South End job, did it for peanuts. Like, he did it almost for free. He was managing at Ireland, or in Irish football at the time, and he was basically, I think, ringing around all the chairmen saying, give me a chance, I'll come. And in fairness, the first spell he had at South End, he was terrific. It was good football. And it was an almost exclusively upward curve until the end. So he's not a bad manager, but the last couple of jobs that he's had have not gone well. But he will back himself, won't he? But he was, I believe, in charge when Southend went out of the Football League. And you wouldn't want two on your CV, would you? So that would potentially be an issue for me if I was in his shoes. I think they're in trouble. Obviously, yeah, the clean sheets are great, but 18 goals in open play this season from 37 games is really alarming. And I've looked at their fixtures. I know Sam's a big fan of looking at the run-ins. It is not good for Barrow. All but two matches are against teams that will regard themselves as promotion contenders. The only two matches that aren't are against Crawley, Dangerous, and Leighton Orient, Revived. They've got, I would make Barrow underdogs in every single match they have between now and the end of the season. I think they might go. Oldham can catch them for sure. No Rob Kelly, of course, now. to take over as caretaker. I know he's done that a few times. He's at Wigan now. So, yeah, who gets the gig?
We shall see. We'll maybe have some update for you on that on Thursday's show. Oldham nil, Exeter 2. Exeter getting their proclaimers on here. 500 miles they travelled there and back to get there. Flo, what's the furthest you've ever done for an away day?
Oh, that's a good question. I think Doncaster, probably.
Did you win?
Can't remember.
It's all part of the fun, isn't it? Is this the season for him, Sam? Your old mob, Exeter? I mean, it's the Parking Derby. This is seemingly every fixture from League One and League Two.
I think it could well be. Ridiculous form. I think it's one defeat in 13. They're on this brilliant run at home as well. And I think they've got some really good-looking fixtures at St James's Park that remain. The one concern is that they're dropping like flies a little bit. I think Nombe is going to be missing. Obviously, didn't play at the weekend. Red card for Atangana. A couple of other injuries picked up as well. So they're a little bit light right now. But I think this was a game that they'd possibly lost in previous seasons. Obviously, wonderful penalty save, down to 10 men. And were able to fashion another chance. And Giovanni Brown, after such a limp start to the season, first half to the season in terms of goal scoring, 16-12 now, I think, for him. So they have got one of the in-form front players in the division. So yes, up to second now. Momentum, I've said it a few times in recent weeks. Yeah, you want to be playing well right now. And I think Exeter are doing that and picking up results. You don't want to be stumbling over the line and getting fortuitous 3 points a la QPR at Luton because it's not sustainable. I think Exeter are probably the real deal now.
So, a significant defeat for Oldham at the bottom. What does that do to the relegation market in League Two with Paddy Power, Abby?
Well, Scunthorpe are not even in the betting odds, so they are down and out, according to Paddy Power. Oldham are the next favourites to be down as well. They're 9-4 on. And Stevenage more likely to be relegated than Barrow at the moment. Stevenage are 23-10 and Barrow 10-1. But we shall see if that all changes as Barrow search for their new manager.
We shall indeed. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app is over 18s only. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Now though, before we go, after QPR lost to Posh for the third time this season, I wanted to know, who's your bogey team? Flo, you can't say Peterborough. There's got to be another one that QPR always struggle against. I know they don't like coming to the world famous City Ground very much.
Yeah, I mean, take your pick. There's quite a few, actually. But I'm going to go with Fulham. I mean, definitely Fulham away from home. I've only really had one enjoyable trip to Raven Cottage as a QPR fan, and that was in 2018 when we nicked a last-minute win. And we haven't beaten them since 2016. I think that was our last win at Craven Cottage. Drissa Silla poked one in for about 2 yards out. Lost 4-1 there this season. Obviously, famously lost 6-0 there in the Premier League when a Delta rep left at half time and caught a bus back home. Yeah, just endless bad memories. We've struggled against them at home as well. So it's got to be Fulham.
For Forest, it is Walsall, believe it or not. Not won in the last 13 games against Walsall, stretching back 23 years that run. Sam, your former Walsall, of course. Who is the team you used to play against that you never seemingly would win against?
Well, I've done this a few times, I think, on the pod. Hartlepool United. I do think I maybe scored a home goal for Swindon against them. But obviously, my four visits to Victoria Park yielded no points and no goals for any of my teams. And I think I remember coming out of the stadium, which is right on the sea there, to be met by my uncle who travelled down from Edinburgh for the game. And I think we'd been beaten 4-0 and I'd came on for 10 minutes. So, sorry, Uncle Al.
Clarkie, can you beat that tale of woe?
Dagenham and Redbridge for me. Dagenham and Redbridge. It was just, it never went well. I either had a stinker or the team was awful or I always felt ill, you know, I didn't feel right. And it was quite local, you know, when I was playing for Stevenage mainly. I think we had played four, lost four at Margate. lost one, drew one. I looked at the aggregate across the six games I played against them. It was 16-4 to Dagenham. Not good. Mark Steen, he was playing up front in those days. Sam, I remember the goalie, Tony Roberts, he was in goal. John Terry's PBR brother.
Legend.
Yeah, John Terry's brother, Paul. It was just, I just felt embarrassed every time I play, every time I finished a match against Dagenham, I felt embarrassed because one of my mates played for them, Junior McDougald. It was awful. And it extended to my time as a co-commentator locally on co-coms for BBC Essex. Never saw Southend beat Daggers. And I remember there was a game, 1-0, miserable Tuesday night. Listen to some of the names that played for Southend. Dan Bentley, Bristol City, Ryan Leonard, Millwall, Corley Woodrow, in the Championship. Freddie Eastwood was playing. Jack Payne, who's doing well for Swindon. All played. Nah, same old. Lost to Dagenham. It was absolutely miserable.
That was quite a depressing way to finish the pod. So instead, let me just flag this tweet from Chesney Hawks, who in response to a request has said, "Good luck to everyone at Sutton United. Here's to raising the Papa John's trophy! CX. I think that's an errant C there, but we'll forgive him that. It's the one and only mistake in the tweet, you might say.
He might get a game if he's got a pair of boots.
We'll be back on Thursday where we'll look ahead to the best of the weekend's action and round up what happened in League One and League Two in midweek. Join us for that if you can. Until then, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and keep up to date with everything Totally by heading to @TheTotallyShow on Twitter and on Insta. Find out the latest subscription offers by going to theathletic.com/league show. The Totally Football League Show is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.